Welcome to The Drive. Over the next 2 hours, we'll break down everything that's happening in the sports world, locally and nationally. Got an opinion? Hit us up at 843-652-3776. The Drive is socially networked. Get us on Twitter at 1003TheTeam or on Facebook at facebook.com/1003TheTeam. Now buckle up, take the car out of park, and let's go to the Sports Radio 100.3 The Team studio in Murrells Inlet, South Carolina, with your boys, Pat Payone and Wally B.
Welcome to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3 The Team, coming to you from Murrells Inlet, South Carolina, in our Sports Radio 100.3 The Team studio. Pat Payone and Wally B. hanging out with you on this Tuesday, the last day of February, February 28th.
It's not just that. It's Fat Tuesday, baby!
It is.
Mardi Gras
totally
kicks in.
Totally forgot about that.
Yeah.
Totally forgot about that.
We've got the margaritas coming in this morning.
Oh, definitely.
I wish.
Something's needed to celebrate. Got a great show for you planned, including a General Hackler Championship Roundtable in hour number two, where we'll be joined by four guests for two segments, and those four guests will be President of Myrtle Beach Golf Holiday, Bill Golden, the head golf pro at the Dunes Golf and Beach Club, Dennis Nickel, the interim Coastal Carolina men's golf head coach, Chad Wilson, and Rhett Graham, the CCU Athletics Director of Corporate Sales and Sponsorships. All those gentlemen will be joining me in the second hour to preview and talk about the General Hackler Championship coming up in just a little bit. So that should be a great roundtable interview right there. We're going to try and figure that out because we only got two mics for guests, so maybe we'll just split them up into twos and do one segment with two guys and the other segment with two guys as well. But there's also a great conversation coming up right after this first segment from athletes who you would never take advice from or sports figures who you would never take advice from, because I got some coaches in mind as well. But starting off, Coastal Carolina. Senior night last night, and senior Siobhan Wiggins had a game in his own. Scored a game-high 18 points to lead Coastal Carolina to the hard-fought 77-72 win over Louisiana Monroe. Very interesting game because neither team could really get the upper hand in this game until the Chanticleers closed the game on a 6-1 run over the final minute and 8 seconds of the game to turn the one-point deficit into a five-point win. With the win, Coastal Carolina moves to 500 on the season, 15-15, 10-7 inside the Sun Belt, and they had an extraordinary game. They shot 50% from the field, hitting 28 of 56 shots. And now, something that was a little bit off was their three-pointers. They went 6 of 21 from three-point land, which was 29% in the game. But they did hit the free throws. Wally, we've talked about it. When they hit their free throws, they have the best chance of winning. And they went 15 of 21 last night and hit 4 of their last 5 during the final minute, including Elijah Wilson's 2 free throws with 9 seconds left to put the game away. That's you know, it speaks to what we've been talking about all season. When this team rebounds well and when they hit their free throws, they usually win these games, and that, this is a case in point right here. But another senior, Colton Racine-Sear, scored 16 points. Elijah Wilson added 11. Jalen Shaw was the fourth player to reach double figures, joining the seniors in double digits with 13 points. And they protected the ball well last night. They only turned it over 3 times during the game, which was a season low for the Chanticleers. Now, you know, to go against my point, they were out-rebounded 41-31, which is very surprising, but yeah, still getting 31 rebounds in the game is a pretty good mark for the Chanticleers. And Colton Racine-Sear was 1 rebound short of a double-double with team-high 9 rebounds. They played great defense last night, forcing 10 turnovers, which led to 14 points, and had 6 steals and also 3 block shots. Louisiana Monroe with the loss moves to 8-21 on the season and 2-14 inside the Sun Belt. And the Chanticleers will end their regular season with a road game at my alma mater, Appalachian State. The two teams will tip off Saturday, March 4th at 3:30 p.m. We will have that game on our airwaves, Sports Radio 100.3 through the team, but you can also see it on ESPN3. So my suggestion, stream it live, but listen to the game broadcast at the same time. That usually is a pretty good effect right there, and brings the best value to the basketball game I can think of. But Coastal Carolina baseball also had a game yesterday. And, you know, we didn't see the 10 home runs or the 22-9 game that we saw between West Virginia and number 18 Coastal Carolina over the weekend. Instead, we saw a pitching duel where West Virginia pitcher Connor Dotson struck out 10 over 6 innings and led the West Virginia Mountaineers to a 4-1 victory over number 18 Coastal Carolina in the final game of the Caravelle Resort Tournament at Springbrook Stadium. The Mountaineers on the season are 5-2, while the Chanticleers fall to 4-5. Now, Dotson did allow 6 hits and 5 walks, but Coastal, they just could not get the runners that were on base across the plate. They stranded 10 runners, including 2 each, in the 7th and 8th innings. And CCU starting pitcher Zach Hopek, he pitched well, but he was saddled with the loss, allowing 8 hits, 4 runs, 3 walks, and 5 strikeouts in 6 innings of work. Something that's really grabbing my attention about this Coastal Carolina baseball team. When they get out to the lead early and fast, they're winning these games. But when they get behind, outside of the George Mason game, they're struggling to come back. And that's exactly what the West Virginia Mountaineers did. In the top of the first, they already put 2 runs on the board. I mean, when you're coming back from 2-0 after the first inning, it's just hard for any team.
Yeah, they came back from 8-0 early.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's the one case where they did come back and win it. But more than not so far this season, they have not come back when they haven't scored first off in these games.
It's still plenty early, though.
Oh, no, it definitely is. Time, so. Definitely is.
Yeah.
Corey Wood had a great game as well as Billy Cook did. Peyton Isaacson had an RBI to bring home the single run scored by Corey Wood for the Chanticleers. And, you know, Seth Lancaster, he had 2 hits in the game, while Matt Beard and Jordan Gore each drew 2 walks. And so that was the offense for the Chanticleers. They'll play their first road game of the season this Wednesday, March 1st, with their annual trip to region rival UNC Wilmington, who's a pretty good team in their own right. First pitch will be set for 4 p.m. That game again on Wednesday. And we will have the broadcast here on Sports Radio 100.3, the team, Wednesday, 4 p.m. for the Chanticleers.
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
In going to my first college game, baseball game, see them on Friday when they won 1-0, I noticed, you know, there's nothing but aluminum bats being used.
Right.
Why don't the pros use aluminum bats, and why does college exclusively use aluminum bats?
Well, there is more pop on aluminum bats, and so they want more action in college baseball, so that's why they allow I don't believe they allow wooden bats in college baseball, and the pros don't allow
aluminum
because they want almost less production, and they believe that these hitters are better, so they don't need the wooden bats.
Okay.
It's more of a production thing and more action, I guess, oriented. But also, I mean, these pitchers in college baseball, I mean, they're ranging, you know, the top end might hit 100, where the top end in Major League Baseball is like 105. And so you think about an aluminum bat with some of the best athletes at the sport hitting it, you know,
I wondered about that because I like the sound of a wooden bat much better than aluminum bat.
Oh yeah, I mean,
and that's just the old
I think they're both pretty cool, but yeah, no, I agree with you. I think wooden bats are better.
I was at the game and I was talking to my neighbor. I wonder why that is. And I was just sitting there pondering
it's
that.
It's always been a rule.
Thanks for clearing it up, Payone.
I try. Maybe I'm not even right. Who knows?
That sounds pretty good to me. I'll go with it.
Fake it till you make it. Let's get into today's day of birthdays and today's day in history, Wally. It is February 28th. Today's birthdays, starting off in 1954, Brian Billick, the NFL coach for the Ravens, who won Super Bowl 35 with the Baltimore Ravens, great coach. Also an NFL coach has his birthday on the same day as Brian Billick, that is Ken Whisenhunt. He was the former Arizona Cardinals head coach when he brought them the Super Bowl when they lost to the Steelers, and he is the current NFL head coach for the Tennessee Titans. Also born this day, a great Carolina Panther, had a great career, Mike Rucker, the NFL defensive lineman, born on this day 1975. Tayshaun Prince, born on this day 1980, NBA small forward / power forward for whatever lineup he was in, but he most notably played for the Pistons along with some other teams as well. Also born this day, current MLB pitcher Aroldis Chapman, born on this day 1988. He has played for the Reds, the Cubs, and now is going to be playing for the New York Yankees this upcoming season. And that leads me to my sports birthday profile, Wally. So tell us who our celebrity birthdays are.
Today, he turns 40. Country superstar who left his wife for American Idol reject Brittany Kerr. Jason Aldean is 40. Not to worry, though. He and Brittany are now happily married after wrecking their home. So. And one of my former favorite bands, lead singer, is 48. His brother actually owns a pizza shop here on the Grand Strand. lead singer for Train, Pat Monahan.
It's one of those voices that you hear a song, you're like, that's Train.
Yeah, you know, he is truly one of the best singers in rock music right now. Has been for a while, but let's face it, man, Train's sold out. They're doing all this pop bubblegum stuff that I can't stand anymore, man.
I don't think they write their own music anymore.
Yeah, that may be the case as well.
Because back in the day when they had, like, Drops of Jupiter, that was, like, the Train that I know. Or
it's probably the last song Pat wrote. I bet.
Probably.
No, probably not. I mean, they at least collaborate. But I'm saying just the sound and production of their music has become so pop.
Yeah, I agree.
I was like, oh, man.
Got to stay hip, Wally.
Train jumped on the pop music train.
Yeah,
but
they
did. You do what you got to do because now they're bigger than they were before. I guess they didn't do that. But anyway. Cindy Wilson from the B-52s is 60 today.
Okay.
Our supreme character actor, he played Pete in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, Jesus, the pederast in The Big Lebowski, Pino in Do the Right Thing, and Seymour Simmons in the Transformer movies most recently. John Turturro is 60
great
this morning.
Great actor.
And this guy's voice, I don't think it just annoys me, but I can't stand to hear this guy talk. I just want to punch him in the face when I hear him talk.
Who's that?
He played Jafar's parrot, Igo, in Aladdin. He used to be the Aflac duck. But he got fired from the Aflac gig for making a joke about the Japanese earthquake.
Yeah.
He is none other than Gilbert Gottfried. He's 62.
You're right. I hear his voice as well.
Oh, my goodness. And, and I thought I would add this in there. Posthumously, he would have been 86 today. Dean Smith. Is that your profile?
You got me.
Oh,
buddy.
Okay.
You're killing me, bro.
Well, I thought we were doing, I forgot we're doing dead people, too. I forgot.
It's okay. It's still his birthday. It's okay.
Tell us about
the precursor. It's okay. Awesome. Yeah, thank you for that preview. Born on this day, February 28th, 1931, Dean Smith, American men's college basketball head coach, called a coaching legend by the Basketball Hall of Fame. He coached for 36 years at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Coached from 61 to 1997 and retired with 879 victories, which was an NCAA Division I men's basketball record at the time of his retirement. He had the ninth highest winning percentage of any men's college basketball coach at 77.6% of the games he coached, he won. During his tenure as the head coach, North Carolina won 2 national championships and appeared in 11 Final Fours. He was known for running a clean program and having a high graduation rate with a 96.6% of his athletes receiving the degrees. And while at North Carolina, Smith helped promote desegregation by recruiting the university's first African-American scholarship basketball player, Charlie Scott, and pushing for equal treatment of African-Americans by local businesses. He coached and worked with numerous people at North Carolina who achieved notable success in basketball, a.k.a. Michael Jordan, as players, coaches, and or both. Smith retired in 1997, saying that he was not able to give the team the same level of enthusiasm that he had given in previous years. As I mentioned, 879 wins, 254 losses in his career, a winning percentage of 776. Two NCAA championships, 11 times in the Final Four, 13 ACC tournament championships, 17 ACC regular season championships, and he was the NIT champion in 1971. Also a 4-time and National Coach of the Year award winner, 8-time ACC Coach of the Year award, and he was put into the FIBA Hall of Fame in 2007. All right, that leads us to our day in history, Wally. I start off in 1967.
I go all the way back to 1854.
All right.
163 years ago, 50 people opposed to slavery met at a schoolhouse in Ripon, Wisconsin, and formed what went on to become the Republican Party.
Oh, okay.
So keep that in mind. It's a good little lesson in history there. And then I go to 1976 from there.
All right. I have 67 and then 71. 1967 on this day, February 28th. Wilt Chamberlain sinks an NBA record 35th consecutive field goal. That is incredible. 35 consecutive made shots in a span of pretty much of the month of February. That today is still a record in the NBA, and that's just one of the records that Wilt Chamberlain holds with scoring, rebound, and durability categories. As I mentioned the other day, he is the only player to score 100 points in a single NBA game or average more than 40 and 50 points in a single season. He also won 7 scoring, 11 rebounding, and 9 field goal percentage titles and led the league in assists 1 time in his career. He is the only player in NBA history to average 30 points and 20 rebounds per game in a single season, a feat he accomplished 7 times in his career. And he is also the only player to average 30 points, 20 rebounds per game over the entire career, or entire course of his NBA career. Next is 1971 for me. This was the 53rd PGA Championship in which Jack Nicklaus shoots a 281 at PGA National in Florida, and that was winning his second golf Grand Slam. Nicknamed the Golden Bear, you know, widely regarded as one of the greatest golfers of all time, winning a total of, I believe it's 19, but this says 18. It might be 18 major championships, while producing 19 second place and third nine. Let me get that over with. 18 major championships while producing 19 second place and 9 third place finishes in them over a span of 25 years. You know, he focused on the major championships and was selective about his schedule for regular PGA Tour events, yet he finished with 73 victories, which is third all-time on the list behind Sam Snead with 82 and Tiger Woods with 79. Between 1971 and 1980, he won an additional 9 major championships and overtook Bobby Jones' record of 13 majors and became the first player to complete the double and triple career slams of golf's 4 professional major championships. At the age of 46, he claimed his 18th and final major at the 1986 Major Masters Tournament, becoming the championship's oldest winner. I then go to 1991, Wally.
I go to 1983. I'm going to skip that 76 one.
All right, go ahead.
83, 34 years ago, it was the end of the 11th season and the final episode of MASH aired on CBS. The special 2.5-hour finale was watched by a record 77%
wow.
of the TV viewing audience. And besides Super Bowls, it's the top, the number one most watched TV show aside from Super Bowls.
I was going to say, is it not also the longest running sitcom? Maybe something like that?
I don't think so. It's only 11 seasons.
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't think it was.
Okay.
Well, yeah, it's sure it's up in the top 10.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But, yeah, but it, and of course, it's definitely up there in the top 3, probably in the most rerunned TV shows you see all over the place.
I have never seen an episode of MASH.
Really?
Never.
Oh, man.
Never.
I wasn't a big fan, but I watched it here and there, and I've watched it more in reruns now than I did. And it's funny for me, a lot of the shows that are popular when they're out, I'm not into them because I'm not a conformist. So I'll like, oh, everyone's liking it? Okay, I'm not going to go watch it. And then, then after it goes into reruns, it's canceled, then I'll start checking it out.
You never know. You might like some of these,
I can't stand Big Bang Theory. Cannot stand it.
I'm not that. I mean, it's funny on some episodes.
When Friends was out, wasn't a fan.
I've
seen some episodes, and okay, I can see why it was big, but I'm not a big fan. But I have watched a couple and thought, okay, it was funny, but I'm just weird like that.
That's okay.
I'm weird.
We're all
Wally.
Weird,
what
Wally.
Can I say?
We're all weird. Weird Wally B.
Then I go to 84 for
me. All right, you have the next one as well.
It was on this day in 84, 33 years ago, when the Grammys set a record with giving Michael Jackson 8 Grammy Awards for the album Thriller.
Oh, yeah.
Record of the year was Beat It. The album was Thriller. And, you know, Michael became a mega super world star for that album,
oh, yeah.
of course. And it's pretty much all I got. Everything else is pretty yucky for what happened this day.
1991 is for me. Don Mattingly was named the 10th New York Yankee captain. Professional baseball first baseman, coach, and current manager of the Miami Marlins. Nicknamed the Hitman or Donnie Baseball, he spent his entire 14-year playing career with the New York Yankees and later managed the L.A. Dodgers for 5 years before moving on to the Miami Marlins that he is now the head manager as well for. But he debuted for the Yankees in 1982 after 3 seasons in minor league baseball, and he emerged as the Yankees' starting first baseman after a successful rookie season in 83. He was named to the American League All-Star team 6 times. He won 9 Gold Glove Awards, 3 Silver Slugger Awards, the 1984 AL batting title, and was the 1985 American League Most Valuable Player. He also served as the captain, as I mentioned, from 91 to 1995 when he retired as a player. In his career, he had batted .307, had 222 home runs, 1,099 RBIs, and his managerial career, 525 wins, 445 losses, which is a winning percentage of .541. Donnie Baseball is one of my favorite Yankees of all time. Maybe Derek Jeter's up there as well, but Donnie Baseball definitely up there, especially when he became the manager for the Dodgers, my favorite team. But that, you have any more?
Nope.
All right.
We out.
Let's tell the folks what they're hearing on today's show. We already talked about Coastal Baseball falling to West Virginia and Coastal Basketball getting the big win over Louisiana Monroe last night. So there's an article about Johnny Manziel, and so that posted the or just brought the thought to my head: what other sports figures would you never want to take advice from? So this is we're going to talk about that, and I put it out on Twitter. We want to hear from you guys as well. Also, Antonio Brown, he got his new contract, making him the highest-paid wide receiver in the NFL. Do we agree with that? Do we disagree? We'll talk about that. And Major League Baseball, getting a little wacky. They're thinking about adding sticky balls to Major League Baseball to help pitchers with grip. We'll talk about that. It's absolutely absurd. In hour number two, we have Wally B's World of Sports, and then we have our General Hackler Championship Roundtable for two segments with a great group of guys coming in. Bill Golden, the president of Myrtle Beach Golf Holiday. Dennis Nickel, the head golf pro at the Dunes Golf and Beach Club. Chad Wilson, the interim Coastal Carolina men's golf head coach. And Rhett Graham, Coastal Carolina's athletic director of corporate sales and sponsorships. All will be in for two segments to talk about the General Hackler Championship. Then we'll wrap up the show with Final Word, What to Watch, and a preview of tomorrow's show. That's all coming up on The Drive. Let's go through the polls on Twitter for them, Wally. At 1003 The Team, want to hear from you guys. What sports figure would you never take advice from in a certain area, and include that area that you would not want to take advice from them about? Please tell us that. Also, should Steelers wide receiver Antonio Brown be the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL? Yes or no? If you tell us no, tell us who should be if it's not Antonio Brown. And what do you think about Major League Baseball considering using baseballs that have somewhat of a stickiness to them to help pitchers? Is it a good idea or a bad idea? All those polls can be found on Twitter at 100 through the team. When we come back from this first commercial break, sports figures you would never take advice from on The Drive. Sports.
Ordinarily, I would spend the next 2 hours telling you to drop and give me various numbers.
Today is Tuesday.
Big radio operation. Do they care what you say?
You ever think about doing radio?
I'm not smart, funny, or handsome.
What you listening to, son?
A mediocre patchwork of hackneyed ideas and tired cliches.
Do not attempt to change the station.
They should have been fired a long time ago.
Precisely. Show them.
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team.
Go ahead and fire someone who works for virtually free.
Welcome back to The Drive. Those get me. Now, think about Johnny Manziel, and you would think about a Sunday morning. You know, some people would probably picture him just sleeping until 2 p.m. to sleep off his hangover, yep. Or maybe double-fisting Pedialyte, you know, to get rid of the hangover. But this past Sunday morning, he was actually in Miami imparting some wisdom on the next generation of college football stars. Now, this is also after Saturday night where he was photographed hanging out on a yacht sipping a pink beverage that it's not really unreasonable to think that there was alcohol in it. But he was there to help coach quarterbacks at the opening Miami football camp. And so it made me think, you know, Johnny Manziel is a guy that if I saw Johnny Manziel as one of the coaches at this camp and I'm a parent, I don't want this kid telling any children, let alone my own, any advice on their life.
Yeah, exactly.
So that made me think about what sports figures in the history of sports would you not want to receive advice on in certain areas? And I think there's some pretty good ones that are coming out on Twitter right now at 100 through the team, and I'll read these real quick once I get to the part that we're kind of talking about. And I start off with relationship advice. First of all, you know, these two guys definitely would never take relationship advice. First of all, O.J. Simpson, you know, kind of ruined the if the glove does not fit, you must acquit saying. That can never be used in court again. That kind of, you know. But on a list of bad advice, you know, you could receive from Orenthal James Simpson, relationship advice has to be near the top of the list. Maybe just general life advice because of all the calamities he's had in his life would be right above it. But relationship advice would be a close second for me. I mean, think about everything that we know or we think we know about what happened with O.J. Simpson and his former wife. It's absolutely incredible that he was and you know, we still don't know all the facts, but everything that points to me and watching, you know, not remembering what happened at that time period when I was very young and then watching the program that they made, the miniseries, you know, everything points to him being guilty, but he got away with it, and whether you think he did it or not, that's my opinion, but you know, multiple calls to the police for battering his wife, and she would show up to certain events with black eyes. O.J. Simpson, especially, you know, the fact that he had multiple lovers on the side as well, not somebody I would take relationship advice from. Tiger Woods is another one. Think back to 2009. This is Thanksgiving Day. Reports start to emerge that he's been injured in a car accident near his Florida home after colliding with a fire hydrant and a tree. We then find out that Elin Norgren, his former wife, took a 7-iron to his car, all because of affairs he had had with multiple females, and we learned a lot more as more details came out. But he is also most recently rumored to have cheated on his most recent relationship, Lindsey Vonn. My question is, have you seen what Lindsey Vonn and Elin Norgren look like? Why would you ever cheat on either of them?
Exactly.
I mean, I know he's probably a sick person mentally that he has to, like, there's some reason why he has to.
He's got to get the hole in one,
cheater.
Bro.
Yeah.
He's got to get the hole in one.
But Tiger Woods is someone I would never take relationship advice from as well. Clint writes in, relationship advice, OJ. Never take relationship advice from OJ. Clint, that's a great one. You are correct there. That was one of mine as well.
You know, I hear that Tiger's issue, his problem with his ex-wife and Vaughn is that he's giving these girls itchy crotch.
Get out of here. Get out of here. Some people just said he liked to know that he was wanted. And even when he was married, he knew that his wife wanted him. But the fact that all these other females, you know, pined after him was the big thing, and he felt like he could get away with it. Maybe that was the correlation between his golf game and his love life. Maybe he just needs to marry someone and cheat on them, and he'll start playing better golf again.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Financial advice. What former sports figure or current sports figure would you never take financial advice? I'm going to start off with Mike Tyson. I mean, think about Iron Mike Tyson. There is no boxer on the earth that was more feared than Mike Tyson. I mean, 19 professional fights he ended by knockout, most of which took place in the first round, quickly became the heavyweight champion. And you know, we saw the comeback matches after he was in prison for 3 years, biting off Evander Holyfield's ear. He was disqualified in that. He never won a championship again. Money should have never been a problem for Mike Tyson. I mean, according to the New York Times, he had earned more than $400 million in his boxing career. However, he had spent most of all of it, fritting it away on extravagant purchases like mansions, luxury cars, and, oh yeah, pet tigers. He also owed $9 million for his divorce settlement and $13 million to the IRS. When he filed for bankruptcy in 2003, he claimed debts of $27 million. That's incredible, especially the guy who probably made the most money at that time period in boxing. The fact that he blew it all on mansions, tigers, and other luxury cars.
Yeah.
Mike Tyson is a guy I would never take financial advice from.
I would never take it from Antoine Walker.
Antoine Walker, why is that?
He blew $108 million in his career and went bankrupt.
Unbelievable. How these guys do that is absolutely incredible.
They seem to think the money's always going to be there.
It's not. Lenny Dykstra is a guy I would never take financial advice as well. He was a 3-time All-Star player who you know, was on the Mets and the Phillies, nicknamed Nails by fans, you know, often seen with chewing tobacco lodged in his jaw. And after retiring, he started a new life as a financial guru, but in 2009, his free-spending lifestyle caught up with him, and he was so broke that he sold his World Series ring. He ultimately declared bankruptcy, and in filing, he claimed $50,000 in assets and $50 million in liabilities, including money owed to both Bank of America and J.P. Morgan Chase. Wow. Wow. That is incredible. That is incredible. Travis writes in, Mike Tyson grew up with no guidance or exposure to financial education. That's a huge reason why a lot of people that make so much money in sports blow their entire savings, because you're right. They never learned how to save their money and get financial advice. Moving on to nutritional advice. People that are sports figures I would never take nutritional advice from.
Babe Ruth?
Smoking a cigar in the dugouts, yeah.
He was a
massive, yeah. That's a good one. Alex Rodriguez is number one for me. When you're the main name associated with the Balco scandal because of, you know, testing positive for anabolic steroids, testosterone, primobolan, during that 2003 season with the Texas Rangers, and in which the same season he won the MVP award and broke the 300 career home run mark, I mean, it's absolutely incredible. When there's 104 major league players that are detailed in a government sealed report, who tested positive, and you're the biggest name, you're putting substances that no one should ever put in their body. Alex Rodriguez is someone I would never take nutritional advice from.
Butterbean.
Butterbean's another good one. I have another huge gentleman. Jared Lorenzen. If you don't know that name, you need to look him up. He played three seasons in the NFL as Eli Manning's backup quarterback with the New York Giants, and he's best known for football fans for his size. He was commonly known as the Hefty Lefty. 3 years ago, he played for the Northern Kentucky River Monsters, and on their roster, Wally, he was listed at 320 pounds. As a quarterback, 320 pounds, making him the largest quarterback in American football. But his weight wasn't keeping him from having fun even most recently. Going back to last offseason, when the Broncos traded Mark Sanchez and Peyton Manning retired, he actually tweeted at the Broncos saying he was available for hire. And also in this past season when you had defensive tackle for the Chiefs, on Terry Poe, throwing a touchdown pass in the red zone, it was claimed to be the heaviest player to ever throw a touchdown. He claimed that Poe took away his label as the heaviest quarterback to throw a touchdown. Jared Lorenzen's a great guy, but you need to Google him right now and see how massive he is. He's a human, a large human being. Anger management. Bob Knight, for all the reasons we all know, throwing chairs, supposedly choking players, to his meltdowns, both courtside and press conferences, he was always a show in his own right and a reason why teams, you know, why you watched games that he was coaching him. But nevertheless, a good temper tantrum was always evident with Bob Knight. But Kobe, Woody
Kobe,
Hayes.
Kobe.
Kobe's a good one. Oh, for sure. Kobe, how many fights did Kobe get on the court with former players?
Exactly.
Woody Hayes, former Ohio State coach.
Oh, yeah.
Think about this, Wally.
That's hilarious.
You know, some people would talk about grit and toughness of Woody Hayes, but I'll talk about the explosion that happened that ended his career at Ohio State. I mean, think about this career. 5 national championships, over 200 wins, and they were actually having a down season where they had lost 3 times in a row to Michigan. They were ranked 20th in 1978. They were 7-3-1 heading into the Gator Bowl when there were just 2 minutes left to play. Ohio State was driving down 17-15, trying to take the lead. Quarterback Art Schlichter probably never saw defensive lineman Charlie Bauman peel off his pass rush and drift into the passing lane, but he picked the ball off, headed towards the sideline, and he was tackled right at Woody Hayes' feet near the Ohio State sideline. Now, we don't know whether something was said between the two, but we do know Woody Hayes grabbed him, loaded up, and socked him right in the throat, a punch right to the throat of this kid. That's right. You know, if you don't like someone...
It was like a clothesline attempt or
something. Yeah, if you don't like someone, you don't agree with them, go ahead and just reel back and just punch someone right in the throat. That should get your point across.
And, you know, if that happened nowadays, he'd be coaching in the NFL right
now. Oh, definitely. Definitely. Finally, you know, public speaking advice, and I got 2 quotes for this one. Now, I'm not going to say that Marshawn Lynch is a dumb guy, because I don't think he is. I think he's actually a pretty smart guy. But if you didn't know who he was and you just saw this press conference from back in Super Bowl 49, you'd question a lot of things. Let's hear it right now, Wally. Marshawn Lynch.
When did my time start? Oh, it started? Well, then let me start. Hey, I'm just here so I don't get fined, so y'all can sit here and ask me all the questions y'all want to. I'm going to answer with the same answer, so y'all can shoot if y'all please. I'm here so I won't get fined. I'm here so I won't get fined. I'm here so I won't get fined.
Should have got fined just for that.
Yeah, he really should have. And, you know, I think we counted it when it actually happened. It was like 29 times that he said the same phrase over and over again. Now,
I'm just here for the donuts.
He filled his obligation of going out there, but he also made himself look like an idiot. So I would never take public speaking advice from Marshawn Lynch. Now, like I said, I think he's actually a pretty smart guy, and he knew what he was doing. He just didn't feel the need to go out there and talk. Jim Calhoun, the former coach of the UConn Huskies men's basketball team, I think he's a great coach, great motivator, but sometimes not great with the media. And here is one instance with Jim Calhoun.
Considering that you're the highest paid state employee and there's a $2 billion budget deficit,
yep.
Do you think that...
Not a dime back.
Not a dime back.
Not a dime back. I'd like to be retired someday.
Oh,
I'm getting tired.
$1.6 million is enough?
I'm sorry?
$1.5 million?
I make a lot more than that.
You do?
Yeah.
What's the
take tonight?
I don't know. What's the deal with Comcast for it?
You're not really that stupid, are you?
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
No,
my best advice to you?
Yeah.
Shut up.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
It's very polite.
No, it wasn't playing me. Like, you shut up. It's just like, if you want to talk to me outside.
Oh, my goodness.
I wouldn't suggest to anybody who are, you know, if you're a speaker to a general mass or on the radio or on television, I wouldn't suggest telling somebody to shut up. I don't think it gives the right message to your audience. And it just makes you look like pompous. And you know the words that follow after pompous. But Jim Calhoun, I would never take public speaking advice from him. Let's go to Twitter real quick. You have any more, Wally?
Let's see here. I wouldn't take anger management from John McEnroe.
Oh, yeah. That's
is
a good one.
Kyle Busch, or which of the Busch brothers has really had a really anger problem there?
Kyle Busch always flips out.
Kyle Busch. I wouldn't take nutritional advice from Charles Barkley.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one as well. Going to Twitter real quick, and there's some really good ones. Michael Newsom says never take gun cleaning advice from Jose Canseco. That's a good one. Or even gun toting advice from Plaxico Burress. I think that's another one. Michael also writes in never take hairstyle tips from Dennis Rodman. Aaron writes in, this is a good one, never take contraception advice from Sean Kemp. I think he has like 30 kids or something like that. I know that's an over-exaggeration.
30 kids from like 30 women.
Yeah, for real. And Mr. Williams writes in, Eddie Lacy can't control his weight either, so he wouldn't take weight loss advice from Eddie Lacy. That's a good one as well. Keep going on Twitter, at 1003team. Tell us which sports figures you would never take advice from. I think that's a hilarious segment right there. But got to let you know, presenting sponsor of The Drive is HTC. HTC, this is Life. Connect with it. And it doesn't matter if you're a power user accustomed to lightning-fast downloads or someone who just needs to check your email, HTC High-Speed Internet has a plan and pricing perfect for you. HTC High-Speed Internet has installation and 24/7 tech support all for free with no hidden equipment fees. And for more details, you can call HTC High-Speed Internet at 843-369-8982. Again, that phone number, 843-369-8982. HTC, this is Life. Connect with it.
You're yelling at the radio right now. Stop it and call us at 843-652-3776. You're listening to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Teams. Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team.
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team. Pat Payne and Wally B hanging out with you. Had way too much fun that I went a little over in that last segment.
It was worth it.
No, definitely worth it. Definitely worth it. But we had some big news in the NFL come out yesterday, and that big news, the Pittsburgh Steelers and Antonio Brown have reached an agreement on a 4-year, $68 million extension that makes him the highest-paid wide receiver in the NFL. He is now tied to the Steelers through the 2021 season, and the breakdown is pretty interesting. He will actually make $18.5 million in the first 3 years of the contract, and then $12.5 million in the fourth. That deal also includes a $19 million signing bonus. Now, he's 28 years old. He's considered one of the best wide receivers in the league and has been a key piece of the Steelers' offense for the past couple seasons. I didn't realize he was a sixth-round pick out of Central Michigan back in 2010.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew he was a late round, but sixth-round pick, that's pretty impressive. But he's been to 5 Pro Bowls. He's earned 3 first-team All-Pro nods in 7 seasons, and he led the league with 1,698 yards receiving in 2014. He's also the first player in Steelers history to finish with 1,000 receiving yards and 10 receiving touchdowns in 3 straight seasons. We also know the bad aspect of Antonio Brown with the Facebook Live video that happened after the Pittsburgh Steelers win over the Kansas City Chiefs in the divisional round of the playoffs this season. The temper tantrums, I guess you can say, on the field where he ran the wrong routes because he felt like he wasn't getting the ball enough, including taking stupid penalties for, you know, fun touchdown dances that, you know, I like, but at the time, you know, you got to be a pro. So the question that I'm posing to you, should he be the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL? Yes or no, Wally? Should he be the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL?
You know, it's debatable, but I would say he deserves to be up there. So I would say, yeah, I mean, he's got to be, you know, if not him, who would be? Him or, you know, or Julio Jones?
I would say Julio Jones is a good one. AJ Green, probably. You know,
Beckham, maybe.
Oh, no, Beckham Jr. for sure.
You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, yeah, I'd say he deserves it.
So right now, the highest paid wide receiver by average yearly salary, Antonio Brown, is $17 million. That is $2 million better than the second place person, which is actually A.J. Green at $15 million. Alshon Jeffrey, who will not be making $14.6 million this upcoming season with the Chicago Bears, as he will likely be a free agent. He is third. Julio Jones, $14.3 million per year. Dez Bryant, 14 flat. And Demaryius Thomas, 14 flat. That's your top six right there. And highest paid wide receiver average salary, yearly salary. Now, I went ahead and printed out the receiving yards leaders from 2014 to this past season. And yes, in 2014, he did lead the league with 129 receptions, 1,698 yards, 13 touchdowns received, and that it averaged 106.1 yards per game.
Yeah.
He was number one in the NFL. He in the next season in 2015, he was number two behind Julio Jones, and he only lost that out by 37 yards. So it's pretty close right there. He did have two more touchdowns than Julio Jones in that season. But this past season, his numbers did take a little bit of a dip. He only had 106 receptions, 1,284 yards, 12 touchdowns. And I think that's more because when Le'Veon Bell came back, they pounded the ball with Le'Veon Bell a lot. And so the production wasn't going to come Antonio Brown's way. The thing that you have, if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers, you have to wait. He is a special talent, and he is top three, in my mind, in the NFL, along with Julio Jones and Odell Beckham Jr. Those three guys, any order you want to put them in, those are the top three wide receivers in the NFL, in my opinion. But you have to weigh his production, where the and where the team's, you know, I guess you could say, trajectory is offensively, and also what he has been able to do off the field and his distractions off the field, or even on the field.
Yeah,
that's the three things you have to weigh. And if I'm saying that the Pittsburgh Steelers are now moving more towards running the ball effectively with Le'Veon Bell, you're getting tired of him being a prima donna wide receiver with the Facebook Live thing, him you know, causing attention to himself and doing dances that are going to get a 15-yard penalty, also running the wrong routes because he's you know, pissing and moaning on the field about not getting the ball.
Yeah.
That... Especially that he's 28 years old. He's still a young guy, but we do see wide receivers do take off a little bit of their production once they get to 30, outside of Larry Fitzgerald, and that's been pretty key, a key stat for most wide receivers in their NFL career. So it begs the question, does he deserve to be the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL? I would say he does based on his production on the field, but if I'm looking at the trajectory of the Steelers offense, I'm going to say no. They are moving more towards, you know, running the ball more effectively. They have younger wide receivers that come in as well. And I also think that his distractions on the field take away from what the Steelers, you know, their overall image of their entire franchise. They are a no-nonsense franchise that doesn't put up with any type of individual things. They handle...
Until now.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of what I'm getting
to. They're paying him now, so now it's like, okay, look, if a game doesn't go the way you want it to for yourself, then shut up and just take your check and don't worry about it, because obviously we believe in you. We're giving you all this money, making you the number one paid receiver, so we need to see a different attitude. They probably told him that as well.
Yeah, does he listen, though? That's the biggest question.
Depends how many times they throw the ball to him, you know?
Yeah, no, it really is. I mean, these guys, the wide receiver position is the prima donna position. They all think that they are, you know, the gift to the football world. And in some instances, they're probably right. But in all actuality, you know, the way the NFL, it depends on what type of offense you're going to run. And I think the Steelers are moving more towards making Le'Veon Bell the bell cow of this offense and really making him the number one option, where Antonio Brown is probably going to be your B option now. So paying him the league most, it just doesn't correlate with me. Now, you have to keep him because he is a top three wide receiver in the NFL. But it's where you think that his trajectory of his career can go. He's still going to be the number one of the top three wide receivers in the NFL for the next couple of seasons. but can you handle all of those distractions that he brings to his team? On Twitter, should Steelers wide receiver Antonio Brown be the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL? A resounding yes. 77% say he should be. 23% say no, he shouldn't be. And I asked you if you voted for no to tell us who you're, who should be them. And we got a response about Julio Jones. That was from Bob writes in Julio Jones. We also got a response on my phone that Odell Beckham Jr., because of all that he does for the New York Giants, he should probably be the highest paid wide receiver as well. Those are all three could be great answers. I don't think you're wrong if you give any three of those answers.
Well, you figure the next hot receiver, top five receiver who's up for negotiation, he'll become the next, the highest
paid. Probably.
Odell Beckham Jr. Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty interesting, though. You know, for him to become the number one highest paid wide receiver in the NFL, I think it's warranted, but you got to weigh the pros and the cons here. And I think that they paid him just a little bit too much. I mean, when you're $2 million clear of the number two wide receiver in the NFL, it's just a little bit too much in my opinion. All right, let's go to the next commercial break. When we come back, Major League Baseball doing something foolish, I believe. That's all coming up on The Drive.
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team.
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team. Got a couple other tweets coming in. Kevin said he would not take health advice from John Daly, and he would not take decision-making in general tips from Jameis Winston. That's another good one. I like that one as well. Dylan writes in, Julio is the best. He's the best in the league. Doesn't have the off-the-field baggage as well. I completely agree with that as well. Good point right there. But Major League Baseball, in an effort to continue to change the game that most of us love and, you know, most of us like the historical value of the game, that this game has been played pretty much the same way for so long, and now they're changing almost ridiculously, changing a lot of aspects of baseball. Major League Baseball is considering the possibility of introducing a new baseball at some point after this upcoming season, and it may take some getting used to for pitchers. Major League Baseball has tasked Rawlings, the maker of the official baseball, with designing a ball that has natural tack on the leather, so some stickiness. The goal with a natural sticky ball would eliminate the need for pitchers to use substances like rosin, pine tar, or sunscreen to doctor the baseball. And these balls would also not need to be rubbed down in a special mud before being put into circulation for play. And Kansas City Royals prospect Josh Stoutman, he said, pitching with anything different than something you're used to takes a lot of getting used to. My job is to stand on a piece of dirt and throw something, and half of that job entails working with a certain type of ball. But it's a game of adjustments, so maybe it's something that will be more beneficial in the long term than the short. Nobody in baseball likes change, though. If nobody in baseball likes change, why are we continuously changing almost every aspect of baseball?
Yep.
I mean, there are rules in Major League Baseball already put in that are supposed to prevent doctoring the baseball, but pitchers consistently use something to get a better grip. When we saw issues with multiple pitchers over the last couple of years with a foreign substance either on their glove, their neck, you know, their arm, what have you. I mean, Will Smith back in 2015 and Brian Matsuits were ejected for using a foreign substance. We all remember Michael Pineda making headlines with a pine tar on his neck. Clay Buchholz came under fire in 2013, and Joel Peralta's ejection from a game was also part of it as well. I mean, there's been players all the time that have been ejected for this this aspect of using a substance to doctor a baseball. But also, there's another aspect of this. Maybe batters would want pitchers to use this so they can get the grip on the ball better. I mean, within reason, the better to protect against errant pitches from hitting them in the heads or in the body.
Yeah,
I just don't like this aspect. You're now saying that we're going to change the tackiness of a ball, and it's going to be, you know, Major League Baseball wide.
The home of Coastal Carolina and the Carolina Panthers. This is WSEA, Atlantic Beach, Myrtle Beach. Cumulus Broadcasting, Sports Radio 100.3, The Team.
I don't know. I just can't get that out of my mind now.
If it ain't break, don't fix it.
Yeah. We also put it on Twitter. 93% of you think it's a bad idea to have sticky baseballs. But hour two of The Drive is brought to you by Air Mechanical. Get a new high-efficient Amana system today. Air Mechanical, we're in your neighborhood.
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team, with your boys, Pat Fayone and Wally B.
Welcome back to The Drive, Hour 2 of The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team, and whether you're listening on the radio at 100.3 FM, streaming it live through our website, TeamMyrtleBeach.com, or listening through the free app, the Sports Radio 100.3, The Team app. We welcome you to today's show. A great show so far. We've got a lot of responses on Twitter, and they're continuing to come in. I love it. Love it. Keep going on Twitter at 1003 The Team. Let us know some sports figures in history that you would never take advice from. Tell us who you think the best wide receiver and who deserves to be paid the most in the NFL. Let us know on Twitter at 1003 The Team. Coming up in just a little bit, we are going to have our General Hackler Championship Roundtable with four gentlemen joining us just shortly. Bill Golden, the president of Myrtle Beach Golf Holiday. Dennis Nickel, the head golf pro at the Dunes Golf and Beach Club. Chad Wilson, the interim Coastal Carolina men's golf head coach, and Rhett Graham, the Coastal Carolina Athletics Director of Corporate Sales and Sponsorships. But if you missed hour number one, give you a little recap of what we talked about. Coastal Carolina baseball fell to West Virginia yesterday, and Coastal Carolina basketball got the win over Louisiana Monroe. We also talked about sports figures that you would never take advice from. I mean, it all started with Johnny Manziel being a coach at a camp in Miami. Couldn't believe that. I don't want my kids taking advice from Johnny Manziel. And so we went through some athletes, sports figures in general, who just you would never take advice from. Keep going on Twitter to tell us yours. We also talked about Antonio Brown becoming the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL and whether we agree or disagree with that. And Major League Baseball, sticky balls. They're going to use sticky balls in Major League Baseball, possibly. I just don't get it. Don't get it, but it is the first segment of the 8 o'clock hour, so you know what time that is.
It's time for Wally B's World of Sports. Life is a sport. Play it like a winner.
That's right. Happy Fat Tuesday. Mardi Gras kicks in today, everybody. So go out there. If you're going to be partaking during any of the season, make sure you're smart. Don't drink and drive. Use a designated driver. Call a cab, Uber, Lyft. Just don't be dumb and don't take a chance. Well, Falcons lineman Mohamed Sanu talked about the Super Bowl yesterday on a show that he was on, and somehow he found a way to blame the Falcons totally falling apart on Lady Gaga.
I mean, it definitely did, because usually halftime only like 15 minutes, and when you're not on the field for like an hour, it's just like going to work out, like a great workout, and you go sit on a couch for an hour and then try to start working out again.
Yeah.
You know, that was my first time experiencing something like that, and it was different.
A wise man once said, never use anyone for your excuse, and don't let anyone use you for their excuse. No. I mean, come on.
Who can blame Lady Gaga for the second half the Falcons had?
What about the Patriots? They had to say that. They had to sit back for the same time. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So it's
and they knew that going into it. It's not like, you know, there's not any people on the roster and the coaching staff that have never been to a Super Bowl. They know how long it takes. Get out of here.
I will say, though, that I think the halftime has become a distraction for the game. I think it is too long. They need to shorten the program somehow. And you know, keep it more about the game and what's going on, and not all of a sudden this little concert in between the games.
It's supposed to be an event, though. That halftime show is, you know, part of the reason why some people even watch the Super Bowl.
A lot of times people are tuning it out because it's become such a debacle.
Personally, I tune it out, but I'm a sports fan, so I'm there for the actual game.
So it's just like, I don't think it caused a loss, but I think it is going too long. Well, we're going to talk about this one more time today, then we're going to put it to rest. The mistake at the Oscars, you know, when they got the best picture wrong and Warren Beatty read the card, et cetera, et cetera. Well, of course, you know, your late night guys had to have some fun with it.
Of course they did.
And Jimmy Fallon had to give his take.
Did you see the Oscars last night? It was a great show. I thought Jimmy Kimmel did a great job hosting. Congrats to Jimmy. But did you see what happened at the end? The producers of La La Land went up on stage after the movie was named Best Picture. Then it was announced that they actually lost to Moonlight. Yeah, and today they joined a support group with the Atlanta Falcons and Hillary Clinton.
They support each other.
Yeah, very supportive.
It
was a really crazy moment. In fact, Moonlight director Barry Jenkins said that he was speechless. Not because he was surprised, because he'd torn up his speech when La La Land was announced. Actually, several producers from La La Land had already given their acceptance speeches before the mistake was realized. That's pretty rough. I mean, now you got to apologize to everyone you forgot to thank in your speech that didn't count. And he's like, what is this?
And you know, this is funny, though. That wasn't the first time the wrong winner was announced at the Oscars. In 1964, Sammy Davis Jr. was handed the wrong envelope, and he announced the wrong name. But he came back a lot stronger than Warren Beatty did, and I've actually got that audio.
And the winner is John Addison for Tom Jones.
But wait!
They gave me the wrong envelope. Wait till the NAACP hears about this.
So that's not the first time that's ever happened
at the
Oscars?
That's the first time it's happened, yeah.
That's ridiculous.
So, of course, much bigger mistake this nowadays than it was back then. But that wasn't the only mistake that was made in the Oscars this year as well, though. They botched up the memoriam segment.
This is absolutely terrible.
They left a couple of people who died out of it, like Gary Shandling, what a big name, Robert Vaughn and Doris Roberts, and one of the Arquettes, Patricia Arquette's used bum that her sister, Alexis, who was a known transgender or a drag queen or whatever.
Right,
you want to call
she was
it.
In The Wedding Singer.
That she was left out of it too, which I have to agree. She was in movies, so she should have got in there. And they actually put somebody in there who is not dead. They had the name right, but they put the wrong picture in there. They showed Jan Chapman, a producer, who's still with us. But the lady's name who passed away was on there, and they totally got it wrong, and Kimmel was talking about that.
As I'm sure you've heard, La La Land was simultaneously somehow the biggest winner and loser last night. You know, it's a strange night when the word envelope is trending on Twitter. It's, in case you missed it, Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway, it was the 50th anniversary of Bonnie and Clyde, and they played Bonnie and Clyde, so the Academy asked them to present Best Picture. This is the biggest award of the night. It's the last one they give out. So Warren and Faye come out with the envelope, and in retrospect now, what we know is what Warren did is he was confused, so he handed it to Faye and let her read the name. In other words, Clyde threw Bonnie under the bus.
And then Conan had to give his two takes.
At last night's Oscars, a film producer who appeared in the In Memoriam montage, turns out she's alive. Yes! Yes, she's alive! Even worse, she's scratching loudly at the roof of her coffin. She wants out. Get me out! Can you imagine what they said to her today? We got good news.
Right.
You were on the Oscars.
Right.
Bad news, they think you're dead.
I was wondering why the work had dried up.
Yeah, she's like, I don't get calls anymore. Yeah.
And lastly, today is Fat Tuesday, the beginning of Mardi Gras. So in honor of Fat Tuesday and the kickoff of Mardi Gras, I've got some things you may not know about Mardi Gras. It's that one time of the year that people let loose and party hard, you know, other than St. Patrick's Day, the 4th of July, Halloween, New Year's Eve.
You're now listing off about 30 different events where we all get hammered.
Exactly.
At the party.
Any excuse we can find. And another thing you may not know about Mardi Gras is it's actually supposed to be a Catholic tradition, even though it mostly leads to very un-Catholic behaviors. Shame, shame, shame. And another thing you may not know about Mardi Gras, it's held every year in honor of the patron saint of alcohol poisoning. To some people, anyway. Also, another thing you may not know is that it's that perfect American holiday where we celebrate French culture with drinks from the Bahamas and beads made in China, which doesn't make a lot of sense. But then again,
no.
Partying till you puke doesn't make a whole lot of sense either. And another thing you may not know about Mardi Gras, thanks to all the masks, it's one of the best times of the year for ugly people to get a hookup. keep the mask on, please. Keep doing what you're doing, but keep the mask on.
Have you ever been to New Orleans, Wally?
Not yet.
I'll get
to NOLA one day.
I have neither. That's definitely a place I want to go to.
Another thing you may not know about Mardi Gras, it features rampant substance abuse, violence, and hedonism, as Charlie Sheen calls it, every night at my house. Another thing you may not know, if your liver isn't screaming for mercy, you're not celebrating Mardi Gras right. We got two more. You know that during Mardi Gras, 95% of New Orleans hotel rooms are filled, and 100% of New Orleans liquor bottles are emptied. And lastly, something you may not know about Mardi Gras. Mardi Gras brings New Orleans $465 million a year, But then they have to spend $460 million a year to pick up all the vomit that everybody spews. So.
Gross.
Some things you might know about Mardi Gras. And that will be my shorter edition today of Wally B's World of Sports. Remember that life is a sport. Play it like a game. And appreciate every moment of every day. Now is a gift. That's why it's called the present. And conscious dressings, forget your blessings. And I cut it short because we got a really awesome couple of segments cut up with some special guests in the studio.
Got a couple of responses on Twitter to a couple of our polls. Mark writes in terms of who should be the highest paid wide receiver. He says Odell Beckham Jr., Julian Edelman, players who play every down and block. I'll take Odell Beckham Jr. Julian Edelman, not so much. Mark also writes in terms of sports figures you never take advice from. Looking for a restroom advice from Ryan Lochte. That's a pretty good one. That is a pretty good one. Keep giving your answers on Twitter at 100 through the team. And when we come back from this next commercial break, we're going to have our General Hackler Championship Roundtable coming up on The Drive.
The computers are frozen.
Thought today was Tuesday.
Tuesday.
What up, my Gippa?
Good morning, sexy.
It's wake up time.
I'm in a nightmare and I can't wake up.
You can really tell who is a morning person and who is not.
You're not in bed. It's work.
A reminder that we broadcast live.
It's showtime.
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team.
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team. Pat Payne and Wally B hanging out with you 16 and a half minutes past the hour on February 28th, Tuesday. I totally didn't realize that it was Fat Tuesday. But we have a special, special thing going on today. We are having our General Hackler Championship Roundtable, and I've been able to be a part of this now. For I think 2 years, we did it last year as well. But I was the producer in the back. Aaron was handling all the talking. So this is a little bit different for me, but it's still gonna be fun. But we got three great gentlemen inside: Dennis Nickel, the head golf pro at the Dunes Club, Dunes Golf and Beach Club; Chad Wilson, the interim Coastal Carolina men's golf head coach; and Rhett Graham, Coastal Carolina Athletics director of corporate sales and sponsorships. And first off, we'll talk to Chad. You guys have already started your season, and you had the Hyatt Collegiate Tournament just recently. Talk about some of the players that, because we don't get a lot of recognition for Coastal Golf, but if I'm a huge golf fan, if I want to go out and see Coastal Carolina, what would I see from these players? And just give me like an overall view of your team so far as the season's been getting underway.
Yeah, so we have a really talented group of individuals on our team. We've got three fantastic seniors that. You know, they want their senior year to be special just like any other senior. They, unfortunately, one of them just had a wrist injury that we're going to have to sit out. He tried to go down at the Hate, and he was our five guy, Ollie Wattergren. He's from Sweden, and he just couldn't get the job done, but he fought real hard for us. Our guys, they're really talented. It was a tough golf course. Sawgrass Country Club is a very, very difficult golf course, and we didn't have the best of weeks, but we leave this Sunday to go to Palmetto Golf Club, and we're looking forward to what that challenge presents us. We do have one of our seniors, Ryan Carpenter. He's a member there, so we're pretty excited about our chances there.
I wasn't even going to come close to trying to pronounce some of these names. Very international flavor to the Coastal Carolina golf team. What does having the General Hackler Championship mean to you and your team, being able to, just go down the street and play this event with some of the great universities that join in?
Right. Well, we get to showcase the Dunes Golf and Beach Club. It's one of our home courses that we get to play. We get to play against the best teams in the country on our home golf course, and kind of measure up to where all the other teams are at, especially this late in the season, kind of see what we need to work on going into conference play.
Yeah, number one golfer in the world, Dustin Johnson, former Chanticleer. Has he had any contact with the team? I know he's a busy man, but, have you reached out to him, I guess you can say, and try to bring some of his wisdom and professionalism to the team?
Right. We certainly wish our relationship was a little better with Dustin.
It's got to be hard, though.
But, he just announced yesterday that he's got another kid on the way. It's another baby boy. So
busy man.
Two kids and number one golfer in the world. He's a pretty busy individual.
Now, I'm not really aware of how college golf works. Is it more of a tournament style season where you're constantly going to different tournaments, or does it get to a schedule where you're playing a different team each and every week?
Right. So we have, you know, 10 or so tournaments throughout the season. And you can range from 11 to 15 teams in just about every single tournament. Mm-hmm. So we really do play a national schedule against anybody and everybody. We've got Iowa State coming to our event. Next year we'll have Pepperdine coming to our event. We'll go to Pepperdine's event. So you really get to see everyone in the country if your schedule allows it.
Should be an exciting weekend. I mean, this tournament's coming up in just a little bit for the General Hackler Championship, and I'm losing my papers. Now, there we go. March 11th and 12th at the Dunes Golf and Beach Club. You have the head pro in front of you, but what do you, how does this course really lay out for your team?
Yeah, well, I think we have a huge advantage there because we play there a lot more than the other teams. We're not really going to do anything course setup wise different than what the guys normally see when they go play. We feel like that's how we're best going to prepare. The Dunes Golf and Beach Club does a great job with hosting events, and we're kind of let them do what they do. And but for our team, our guys have seen just about every pin that they're going to put out there. We played in the rain out there. We played in the wind out there. We played when it's cold. We played when it's warm. So anything that the weather throws at us, we feel pretty confident that we'll be able to handle it.
We're keeping our fingers crossed to have some of the great weather we've experienced over the last couple of weeks. But, another question, with some of the top 50 teams that are coming in here, I think there's eight top 50 teams coming in to play this tournament. You know, talk about the experience your players will have going up against some of these great schools. I mean, you have some great players in your own right, but you're also getting to play against some of the great programs. And just talk about that experience at the beginning of a season for your players.
Yeah, so there's a lot of individuals in this event that were highly ranked junior golfers and are highly ranked college golfers, and our guys will be playing with them. I do want our guys to focus on their games, but as well, they can certainly learn from the best players as well, and hopefully they'll learn some lessons as they play 36 holes with them the first day.
And they have the chance to put their name in with the likes of like a Brendan DeJong, who's won this, Derek Fathauer, Henrik Norlander, and all the other PGA Tour professionals that have played in this course. So that, I mean, that's in this event, that's absolutely incredible. I couldn't even imagine being in the same context as some of these guys. I'm a terrible golfer, though, so that doesn't even really translate for me. Joined by Dennis Nickel, the head golf pro at the Dunes Golf and Beach Club, Chad Wilson, the interim Coastal Carolina men's golf head coach, and Rhett Graham, Coastal Carolina Athletics Director of Corporate Sales and Sponsorships. And Dennis, you know, this course, there's a breakdown in this book, but that doesn't do it justice. This course, I've heard so many great things about how it's laid out and how almost each and every hole presents a different problem for you to get into, especially with a hacker like myself. Talk about the course and how it lays out for a collegiate golf tournament like the General Hackler Championship.
Well, thank you. And the Dunes Club obviously has a huge history of championship events, from the Senior Tour Championships to Women's U.S. Opens in the past, and certainly most recently we had the PGA Professional National Championship in 2014. We're going to be hosting the USGA Women's Four Ball coming up this May. So clearly, if the course wasn't there, these organizations and associations wouldn't pick the Dunes Club to come out and play. So with that said, obviously the calibers there, our superintendent Steve Hamilton and his crew does an incredible job keeping the conditions at a point, like Chad said. You know, we could have a tournament any day there at any mm-hmm. time. We just need to switch over and put some ropes and stakes up and some signs, and you got yourself a championship. So the course itself can hold its own water. So, with that said, the players coming in here, the comments we hear from the past championships we've had here, the past Hackler events, the college players really love it because it's a challenge, obviously. The greens are always – they're all elevated. You have to hit quality shots to score well. Typically, the players that play the best are going to win. Some tournaments that's not the case, where they can kind of scrap it around. Where in this event, you really have to hit all the shots. Front nine kind of carves through the wooded areas, the big live oaks, and you get to the back nine, and the swash comes in from the ocean, so it creates a whole other challenge out there with the wind, and that's usually the biggest challenge at the dunes, being right on the ocean, is the direction of the wind as well. So the course has everything it can give you, and usually the cream rises to the top.
I would say so, yeah. This is the third consecutive year that the Dunes Club is hosting this tournament. Talk about the relationship with not only Coastal Carolina, but Collegiate Athletics and Myrtle Beach Golf Holiday as well.
Well, Coastal approached us 3 years or 4 years ago, actually, in the planning stages for the first year event, and they were looking for a challenge to bring this tournament up to the top and have the top golf quality course hosting it. And so we took a look at it. We went to our board, and certainly want to thank the membership for opening the doors to allow this championship to happen. I think actually the membership gets behind this because, you know, a lot of them are alumni of these schools.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, our golf committee chairman went to Virginia, and the individual award went to Virginia Player last year. We have a lot of Gamecocks, and of course they won the team last year. So there's a lot of there's an extra facet there other than a normal championship where you have this support from the alumni of these universities coming in, and it creates this great buzz around the club. And so, you know, I think the membership really enjoyed it, and it's fun to watch. And I mean, talk about good golf. That, you know, obviously our members like to see good golfers play our course because they know where they hit it every day, and then they like to see these guys hit it 100 yards past where they're landing every and see it played a whole different way. So it's a fun event, and we forged this relationship with them. We hope it lasts a long time because I think it's a great event, and our goal is always, and I know the same here with Red is and Chad, is to try and take this to the next level and be a top college tournament in the country. And I know we have the venue. We know we have the ability to do it. It's just a matter of, you know, kind of growing it over time.
Now, speaking of that, I would probably say it is one of the top, you know, golf tournaments collegially across the nation. How do these teams actually get involved in trying to – is there like a list that they have to get in to actually get into this tournament?
Yeah, we basically just reach out to the teams that we want to come play. If it fits their schedule, the dates wise, you know, we let them come.
It's an incredible list. I mean, number 4 Virginia, number 12 Wake Forest, number 16 LSU, number 26 Kent State, North Florida 33. Shock of that, Florida school is probably in the top 50 in collegiate golf. But like you said, you're also returning the winner of the tournament, Jimmy Stenger of Virginia. It's an incredible field. Incredible field. You're about to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say, it doesn't really matter where you're from or who you are. If you're a good golf team, we're going to bring you to the dunes and let you, you know, test your game.
We had Jimmy Stenger last year come back, and after he won the Hackler, came back and won the Southern Amateur in the summertime at the Dunes Club. So obviously it's one of his favorite courses. And I want to mention also we have a board member, Justin Roof, that played golf at Wake Forest as well. So he's looking forward to seeing that team come in.
Oh, definitely, definitely. With names like Ambush and Devil's Bite, I mean, all these holes have nicknames. Bullseye, it's quite intimidating. Where would you say, you know, the scoring holes for these collegiate players? What would be different for myself going out there, but for, you know, where are some scoring holes? If somebody's, you know, going to go out for the tournament and watch, you know, where's probably the best place to set up if you're a spectator?
Yeah, really, when you look at it, I mean, there's a challenge in every hole. I mean, anyone can be birdied, but anyone can be double or tripled. You know, it's one of those things where you have to take advantage of the par fives there. We have number 4 and 8 and 15 are the ones that most players will try and get out into, or at least, you know, take advantage of making an eagle or birdie there, because you got some long par fours and some tough ones out there when you're looking at 11, 12, 13, that what we call alligator alley as you're coming through there, and then coming up on, you know, the finishing holes of 18 and, you know, kind of trying to come into the clubhouse into that wind. So they have to take advantage of those holes that are kind of downwind or the, you know, the shorter par fives. So if they can do that, then they got a chance to score pretty well.
Again, the 2017 General James Hackler Championship hosted by Coastal Carolina University in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, March 10th and 12th, or March 10th through the 12th, 2017. Bring on Rhett real quick. There is still availability for people to get out there and do some hole sponsorships. Tell us how they can get involved, not only through sponsorships, but how they can go out there and be a spectator for this great event.
Yeah, so first off, happy Teal Tuesday to everybody out there.
Thank you for reminding me.
But, yeah, thanks for having us. Let me just say, first off, big, big thanks to Bill Gold, Myrtle Beach Golf Holiday, Dennis Nichol, staff of the Dunes, Tracy Connor, Myrtle Beach Area Golf Course Owners Association, Chad Wilson, obviously, for what he's doing. Patrick Sparks, been a big supporter as well. And, you know, I say it every year, this event does not happen if those said folks don't help make it a reality. So big thanks to them, and I'm going to thank them every time I can as well. So, yeah, so the event this year, just like Chad and Dennis were saying, the demand is incredible. You know, we've said from day one, our goal is to make this a top five national collegiate tournament. If we're not there, we're pretty close. And we look at that field, and you know, those are national brands. And that's where Coastal Carolina is now on a national collegiate landscape. That's where we are. So, well, let's turn our attention quickly to the Collegiate Am that you were talking. So that'll be Friday, March 10th, 1 p.m. shotgun. And, this is your chance to play with the future PGA Tour guys. Let me just give you a couple names, or more than a couple names that have made to the PGA Tour, including, I think we got four Ryder Cuppers in here. So you've got, you mentioned Brendan DeYoung, Dustin Johnson, Brant Snedeker, Bill Haas, Reese Davies, Derek Fathauer, Robert Streb, Jamie Lovemark, Patrick Reed, Jonas Blix, Wesley Bryan. So this is your chance. It is. So this is your chance to get to play with these guys before they make it to the big stage. And you know what? You know, time will tell what the guys that have played in the last few years, where they will end up on tour or where they will in their professional golf journey. But the format for the Collegiate Am is your foursome. You pick a foursome. A corporate sponsor is $1,350. That includes a hole sign that's it's basically on a 6-foot pole, and it's got a graphic and everything with a hole, the yardage. And a lot of our sponsors like using them, putting them in their lobby or their office. It's awesome. A nice little talking piece as well. So you pick your foursome. You come out and play with these guys. You get paired with the top player from one of the universities. And then we'll have lunch beforehand. We'll have dinner and awards banquet in the clubhouse afterwards. Big video board out there, and it's exciting. So we've got that going on. And, if anybody, I tell you what, we've got 20 teams. We kind of like to keep it at 20, but if anybody, as a result of this conversation today wants to get involved, feel free to call me. I'm in my office, 843-349-2771. Let's do it one more time, 843-349-2771. Call me, and, we'll take no more than two teams. Which will put us at 22 teams. We want the experience to be something where it's, you're getting valuable time with these guys out there, and you're not jamming up the golf course. So, so that's what's going on. So we're excited about it, and, you know, it's, come be a part of it. Let me tell you briefly, quickly, where Coastal Carolina is. So let's reset. Let's go back to last year's Super Bowl.
Okay.
I always like talking about this. You know, I played golf at Coastal, so any chance I can talk about Coastal, I'm excited. So, you go back and think about what Coastal Carolina's done in the last, we'll call it 13 months, okay? Last Super Bowl, two guys playing Super Bowl. Yep. Josh Norman, Mike Tolbert. We all know that. Go on and win the College World Series in Omaha. National champions, baseball. Amber Campbell goes to the Olympics, makes her third Olympics. Some people don't even get to go to the Olympics. Some people don't even get to be in the same city as the Olympics. And she gets to go three times.
Yeah.
She finishes eighth in the women's final hammer throw. And then, of course, Dustin Johnson. You may have heard about him, what he did. Won the U.S. Open, PGA Tour Player of the Year, and number one in the world. Think about
it's
that.
Incredible.
Number one in the world. And then also Tommy La Stella. Played baseball for us, plays for the Cubs, wins a World Series. So it's been an incredible year, and I don't think this is going to stop anytime soon. I think really the tide's just rising, if you will. So
it has been an exciting. I mean, I'm associated with it because I get to talk about Coastal Carolina, and we do all the broadcasts, and it's been exciting for myself, even though, you know, my school is usually the one that's on the losing end. I went to Appalachian State, and so
we'll have some good battles with you over the ensuing years. You
football
know?
Might be the only sport we can contend with you guys. You know, everything else, you know, is just. It's dog doo-doo, really. I'm a realist in that aspect. No, but now this is if you haven't been out to this, and I didn't get a chance to go out there because I was helping Aaron with an event. If you ever get the chance to go out there, I've heard from multiple people around the golfing community that I've gotten to play golf with that this is one of those events that you do not want to miss, the General Hackler Championship. Just talk to me about what you've heard from people who have attended this event and how exciting it is for the Myrtle Beach community to really grasp around this collegiate golf tournament.
Well, you know, it all starts, like Dennis said, it all starts with the membership and the staff. If they don't embrace the event, it does not happen. And so the Dunes represents the finest in hospitality, the finest in the golf course, finest in the industry. So for us to get a chance to pair with them, that's a no-brainer. And guys like Billy Monkton, who is the president of the Dunes Club, Justin Roof, who's a member of the board of directors, also the tennis chairman as well. These guys help push it across the finish line. And so they've been great proponents of the event. And in terms of the folks participating, there's no greater compliment than somebody walking off the 18th green last year and saying, I'm committed for next year. So that makes it easy. Awesome, yeah. That makes it easy. And so when we went through the, we'll call it, quote, the renewal process, getting everybody upped and, you know, and got their group in, it was an easy process. So we really didn't have a chance to open up to too many teams this year in terms of the collegiate AM. And now Chad can speak to the collegiate team aspect of it, but it just sells itself. You get a chance to play the Dunes Golf and Beach Club, one of the finest in America, no doubt, with some of the best collegiate teams in America, with some of the best collegiate players in America. So when you combine those, it's pretty tough to beat.
Definitely. We'll take a short break, and we'll come back with more of the General Hackler Championship Roundtable with these fine gentlemen. This is all coming up on The Drive right after this commercial break.
0435.
Get your sports fix on your morning drive into work. The Drive with Pat Payone and Wally B, 7 to 9 a.m. on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team.
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team. Pat Payone and Wally B hanging out with you. 39 minutes past the hour. Fat Tuesday. Thank you for telling me that. I had no idea.
Teal Tuesday, too.
It is Teal Tuesday, too. Thank you for reminding me of that as well. My mind is crazy right now. We're having our General Hackler Championship Roundtable with Dennis Nickel, the head golf pro at the Dunes Golf and Beach Club, Chad Wilson, the interim Coastal Carolina men's golf head coach, and Rhett Graham, Coastal Carolina's athletic director of corporate sales and sponsorships. And, you know, let's talk about the format of this tournament, because Rhett already went into the, was it the Thursday or was it the Friday?
The Friday
event. But talk about the actual collegiate aspect, the tournament format for this General Hackler Championship.
Yeah, from a setup standpoint, basically the players come in and they play 36 holes on Saturday. So from our crew actually cuts two cups in the greens on Saturday.
Jeez.
They play the first 18 and one of the holes have a plug in it, and then they just actually remove the flag, take out the plug, switch them around, and just keep on trucking. And we have what we've done and what we think has been pretty popular is we put an ambassador, what we call it, a volunteer, with every single pairing out there, and that ambassador can help the players get drinks and they actually pick up box lunches for them at the turn in between the 18s, and they just keep on going. It's a long day, a lot of golf to be played. So if someone's going to come out and watch, you know, on Saturday, you can pretty much come anytime between 7:30 and 6 o'clock at night or 6:30 at night by dark. They're finishing in the dark. So,
day.
It's a full day of golf and it's a long day, but it's a good day. And the players are usually pretty whipped afterwards. We have a little meal there and you can see they've been grinding for 10 hours straight. And, you know, it's a lot of golf, but it's a great day. And then we roll back in on Sunday and we do a double tee on Sunday morning, tee times off front and back, and then when they finish up the play, a lot of them got to get on the road and head back home or to the next place that they're going. So 18 holes on Sunday, and then we post the scores and have a little award ceremony there with the trophy ceremony.
And there's an individual aspect also, but a team aspect as well. So is the team I don't know how many players per team are actually in this event, so you could tell me that, but is it everyone's score combined that goes into the actual team score?
Right, so college golf is a unique sport,
yeah,
because golf's an individual sport, but at the collegiate level, it's played as a team. So you bring, you know, five players each event, and on each round, you count the low four scores.
Okay.
So you get to throw one score out, but just the low four counts for each round, and then but there is an individual winner at the end of the event as well, just like you know, Jimmy Strange is one.
Yeah.
So it's always interesting to watch both those battles.
And you know, going back to the entire tournament as a whole, you know, if someone wants to get involved in this, I know you said right now you're actually, you know, telling people, you know, we're turning people away for volunteers because there's so many people have come out and volunteered for this. But if somebody wants to get involved, whether it's either going to the tournament or doing something at the tournament, how can they get involved?
Yeah, well, there's no charge to come out and watch. So, right. There's no ticket price. So we certainly encourage people.
Just show up.
It's a beautiful day. Just come on out and,
perfect.
And certainly, you know, you can park there at the Dunes Club and come out and watch the golf, you know, from a volunteer standpoint, yeah, it's funny how far this has come. You know, a couple of years ago, we were on the same show a couple weeks prior begging to fill some final volunteer spots. And now we're turning them away, and we have been for about a month and a half. We've been turning people away, but we have a finite number that we need. We need about 50, you know, 40 to 50 volunteers for this event because we have about 27 ambassadors each day plus some other, administrative jobs around there we got to do for just scoring and transportation and things like that. But, So we had 50 volunteers in like the first week we sent out the request. So it was a great thing, and show the community's really supporting this, and certainly we can't do it without the volunteers. That helps us out tremendously. So what we're doing is we're actually taking any of those volunteer requests and we're rolling them into our four ball coming up this May. So we're trying to recruit them for that as well. So if you're looking to volunteer, we need you at the end of May as well. So, we always something going on at the Dunes Club that we're looking for some great help. So we appreciate the community. I think we live in a town with some very savvy golf, you know, fans, and those people like to watch good golf. And I mean, I'm telling you what, we were watching some of these players hit three woods last year, 320 yards off our first tee, and I'm watching where I hit a pretty good drive, and I'm not short by any means, and these guys are flying my driver with a three-wood, and I'm just shaking my head saying, it is a whole nother level. I mean, it's our famous par 5 Waterloo that wraps around the lake. If anyone in this town knows, you know, has played the hole, we got these players laying up short of the water and knocking three-woods into the middle of the green, you know, and flying them in two, and it's stunning. And it really, when you get to play along in a college am with something like that, I still have members talking about those types of swings that are happening out there when they play alongside them. So it's a great thing, and hopefully people embrace it a little bit more.
Not only are you in awe of some of these shots these guys hit, it almost makes you sick to your stomach that you can't replicate, you know, such the same swings or even the look of the swing.
Think about what Bobby Jones said about Jack Nicklaus. He plays a game with which I'm not familiar.
Yeah. That's, hey, I've taken a bunch of golf lessons in my life, and someone's, you know, it's always been a theme that I've heard is that, you know, your golf swing is like your fingerprint. Everyone's is different, and you have to find your own and just tweak it. Well, that really hasn't helped my game at all, but, it's, you know, this is a great event. Again, the 2017 General James Hackler Championship hosted by Coastal Carolina, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina at the Dunes Golf and Beach Club, March 10th to the 12th, 2017. You guys have to be excited. Is the team excited just to be able to stay home and go ahead and play in this event against some great competition?
Yeah, they're always excited to get to play the Dunes Club, whether it's our normal weekly play day out there or we get to compete in this championship. It's the week that the tournament's on is either at the beginning or the end of most teams' spring break.
Yeah.
So all the teams will be in town. They'll get to experience Myrtle Beach for a few days before or after the event, and that's something that we sell to these teams when we're putting this event together, and that's why we've been able to get such a great field.
You know, for people who don't know the golf team, tell us something about the golf team that we wouldn't necessarily know unless we knew the guys out there. I mean, I know there's two brothers on this team, correct?
Right,
they butt heads all the time?
They're actually really good.
Okay.
One is a senior, Alfredo, and the other one is Luis. He's a sophomore. They're both from Mexico. One thing you probably wouldn't realize about our team is we have 8 guys, and half of them are internationals.
Yeah.
We do a lot of international recruiting. The golf over in Europe and Mexico is really good, and those guys are always looking to come over here and further develop their games and get ready for you know, the pro tour, whichever tour they're on, and hopefully on the PGA tour or the European tour.
Plus, it's not a bad part of your job to be able to travel these places and recruit these great golfers, right?
It is. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of hard work.
Sure.
When you go overseas, you don't go for just 2 or 3 days. You tend to stay for 5 days. So I always struggle with finding food to eat. I'm a picky eater.
I hear you. It's incredible, you know, looking at the list of people who have played in this tournament, and, you know, this year we'll be adding another name to this great list of winners. It should be very exciting. Anything else you guys want to add into the roundtable discussion? All right. Well, I'm going to be trying to get out there, and we're talking about possibly having even the show out there for Friday morning. So that'll be a pretty fun thing. Got to pass it along to my uppers to see if it's manageable.
Yeah, I'll say one last thing. We definitely encourage everybody to come out and watch not only our guys, but definitely watch the other teams as well. Want to thank all the volunteers that are out there. The volunteers, this event doesn't happen without their help. And I know Dennis and Red have already mentioned that, but that's something that is very important for us. And as we move forward and kind of develop this event into one of what we hope is one of the better events in college golf. We're going to need probably more volunteers as we move forward.
Last question, it just came to me. With a collegiate event like this, is it more of the the crowd being more professional and cheering everybody on, or is there's collegiate rivalries here? I mean, you got Virginia and Virginia Tech there, Wake Forest and NC State. There's a lot of rivalries at South Carolina and Coastal Carolina, Charleston Southern and Coastal Carolina. Is it more of what we see at like the stadium course in Phoenix, where they boo if you don't hit it, or is it everyone's cheering everyone?
I think college events are a little bit more laid back just because people don't really know how to act sometimes. But I'll tell you a quick story. I played in Florida State's event when I was a senior at Kennesaw State, and on the 16th hole, there was a house there that we were fortunate to be in the last group with Florida State. And every time each player putted out, they would play the Florida State fight song over the loudspeaker. So that was my first experience with something like that. So
you're telling me to wear a backpack with a speaker with Coastal Carolina fight song.
Right. It's definitely out there. Just be professional, but certainly have fun. And, we're really excited. We're looking forward to it. I know our guys are looking forward to competing out there, and it should be a lot of fun.
Should be a great event. Again, the 2017 General James Hackler Championship hosted by Coastal Carolina at the Dunes Golf and Beach Club. This is March 10th through the 12th. I really appreciate the time. Dennis Nickel, the head golf pro at the Dunes Golf and Beach Club. Chad Wilson, the interim Coastal Carolina men's golf head coach. And Rhett Graham, Coastal Carolina athletic director of corporate sales and sponsorships. Really appreciate the time, guys, today. And passing along the information about this great tournament that everyone can go be a part of, as you said. No cost to go out there. Just go out there and cheer, not only for Coastal Carolina, but for great golf as well. Really appreciate the time. We'll be right back after this commercial break for the final word, what to watch, and a preview of tomorrow's show on The Drive.
It's time for the final word. The show is almost over, but the conversation continues throughout the day on Twitter at 1003 The Team. Enjoy your work day. We're wrapping up ours.
Just about 3 minutes left in today's show. The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team. Pat Payne and Wally B hanging out with you. And my final word is ridiculous. You know why? Breaking the 40 time, the fastest 40 yard dash should be, about bragging rights and that you're the fastest, human being to ever be in the NFL combine. But yeah. Adidas is taking it to the next level. They are offering an island. What? Like a piece of land, an island, to any prospect who breaks the 4.24 40 time that was set by Chris Johnson in 2008, as long as they do it in their company's 2017 Adizero 5-star 40 cleats and agree to endorse the company's shoes for the entire 2017-2018 season.
That's crazy.
So in the fine print, it says, Adidas agrees to provide a winner with an island as soon as reasonably possible, but that the company can also just pay the athlete $1 million instead. So, Wally, do you take an island that you got to pay taxes on, but you can have for the rest of your life, or do you take $1 million that you still have to pay taxes on?
Cash option, give them everyone half and be done with it.
I would take the money as well.
Yeah.
The island's cool and all, but you have to figure out how to get there. You got to do something with it. You're paying taxes on that the rest of your life.
Right.
Yeah, I'm going to take, and they're saying that it would be an island in either Canada or Central America that can be bought less than $1 million.
The old cliche, take the money and run.
But so now,
then take the money.
So now are we talking about an island the size of this table that's in front of me, dinner table?
Exactly.
I mean, come on.
You got one palm tree on it and one little patch of sand.
It's just gotten absurd. I mean, over the years, Adidas has had endorsement deals to prospects who have run the fastest time, cash prizes of $100,000, and offered $1 million for someone who actually broke Chris Johnson's mark. But we'll see. I don't know if anybody will break that mark. What's on TV tonight? Some great college basketball games. Georgetown at Seton Hall at 6:30 p.m. Fox Sports 1. The best game of the night, in my opinion, Florida State traveling to Duke to take on the Blue Devils, 7 p.m. ESPN. Florida State actually beat Duke 88-72 earlier on in the season. Indiana at Purdue at 7 p.m. ESPN2. Mississippi State at South Carolina, 7 p.m. ESPNU. DePaul at Providence, 8:30 p.m. Fox Sports 1. Oklahoma State at Iowa State, 9 p.m. ESPN2. Pittsburgh at Georgia Tech, 9 p.m. ESPNU. And then I think another great game will be Vanderbilt at Kentucky, 9 p.m. ESPN.
It's been a great show. Thanks to the guys coming in. For Wally, I'm Pat Payne. Everybody have a great day.
Your sports leader from Little River to Loras, Conway to Carolina Forest. We are WSCA, Atlantic Beach, Myrtle Beach. Cumulus Broadcasting Sports Radio 100.3, The Team.